Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, October 18th, 2015. My name is Larry Kay and I'll be the moderator this morning. The share ID for Friday, October 16th is 6960. That's 6960. And this morning, A Vision for You presents Practicing These Principles, Step 1, Let's Be Honest. You know, in order to experience this process of spiritual transformation, it's really imperative that we get clear on what our problem is, what the solution to our problem is, and the means in which to bring that solution to light. And in the chapter entitled We Agnostics, we learned that lack of power, that was our dilemma. You know, we had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Taking step one without any reservation, without any lurking notion that we can solve this menacing dilemma on our own, well, that, you know, is the absolute requirement towards the pathway to ultimate freedom. And to the extent that step one is taken honestly and not diminished in any fundamental way, the great paradox really is that through this state of complete surrender, we are launched towards the bridge to liberation. And we're reminded that what seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you will, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Joining us today is Sally A. She's a recovered compulsive overeater from Jersey, and Sally is committed to living a 12-step way of life and, of course, carrying the message of recovery. Sally, good morning, and you take it away. And Sally, press star one, if you would.
Oh. Okay.
There you are. I can hear you. I can hear you.
Here I am. I didn't realize I was remuted. Good morning, and thanks to Larry. Thank you for that introduction. And thank you to all of my friends for being here this morning. And I'm just, it's a wonderful opportunity to share this morning and to have a few extra minutes beyond the 3 minutes to speak to you about the subject this morning at hand. And the title this morning is Practicing These Principles, Step one, let's be honest. And it's really a such a pregnant subject. It really is. At first I looked and I thought, how am I going to share on that for 30, 40 minutes? And the more I dug into the subject, the more I realized, what was I thinking? Apparently I wasn't thinking, because I did pray and this is what came to me. So before I get started, I am going to pause now and I'm going to ask my higher power to direct and to lead and to guide throughout this meeting today. Father God, I thank you for the opportunity to speak and to be part of the learning that's going to happen here this morning. Father, I thank you, Father, for all that you are teaching us. I thank you for the subject. I ask you, Father, to help me to be honest. Help me to be more and more honest. And I thank you for the opportunities here today to grow and to learn. Thank you for all that you're doing in all of us and through us. I praise you and thank you in your name, my Creator. Amen. And so with that, I would like to invite you to join me here on page 218. I would like to start here on page 218 in the second paragraph. I cannot see the cause of this temptation now, but I am to learn later that it began with my desire for material success becoming greater than my interest in the welfare of my fellow man. I learn more of that foundation stone of character, which is honesty. I learn that when we act upon the highest conception of honesty that is given us, our sense of honesty becomes more acute. I learn that honesty is truth, and that truth shall make us free. There's a powerful sentence. I learned that honesty is truth, and that truth shall make us free. In this last year, I've been very focused on, in my learning, on these principles, because the book tells us, this book tells us, practicing these principles in all our affairs. I started to think, am I practicing these principles in all my affairs? Do I even know what the principles that I'm practicing are? And so consequently, I started looking at principle number one. And the first principle, principle number one, is honesty. And so when we look at the steps, we admitted we were powerless, in our case, over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Then I had to ask myself, what am I really willing to admit? And that's what we say. When we use that word, we admitted we were powerless. Do we realize that what we're saying here is, let's get honest. We're going to admit to something, and that's going to require some honesty. And interestingly, it started with me admitting my powerlessness over food and that my life had become unmanageable. But you see, as I've become progressively recovered, we have this progressive eating disorder, a progressive disease, as the book tells us, and I realize I have this progressive recovery that I've been learning and living these last few years of recovery. I realize that honesty, too, is progressive, because what I'm willing to be honest about is shifting and changing as I grow in my relationship with my higher power. But it all begins with this step one. We admitted we were powerless. And in that word, admitted, is intrinsically, we see the word honesty. Because are you willing to admit that you're powerless? And what exactly are you willing to admit? And doesn't that take a strong level of honesty to finally admit to yourself and then to another human being, something is wrong? That is step one. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives have become unmanageable. So I want to take you to page 58, the middle of the page. Let's take a look here at this word here. Well, there's three times in a row. On page 58, we see the word honest. Rarely have we seen a person fail. This is a message of hope to all of us. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. This is really heavy-duty stuff for me, folks. And I'll tell you, it's because I was not raised in my mind to be a very honest person. I come from a large family of Italian New Yorkers. I was one of seven children. And we did a lot of finagling to get out of trouble. We were ever blaming each other, making excuses, hiding what had to be hidden in order to get out of trouble. Honesty, that just was not something I was thinking a whole lot about when I was growing up. I was thinking about survival of the fittest. That was much more my lifestyle. And here we are talking about honesty. And I'm going to talk more about that. Why is it so hard to be honest? For all of us, not just for the Italian New Yorker, me. So let's stay with this paragraph here. We've got three times in one paragraph. It says, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Yep, that was a big problem, being honest with me. There are such unfortunates They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. We're going to take a good look at that word in just a moment. But let's finish the paragraph. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover. This is another message of hope. If you happen to have emotional and mental disorders like me, good news. Many of them do recover if they have the capacity. There's the condition. The hypothesis is that even if they have the grave emotional and mental disorder, if they have the capacity to be honest, they too can recover. So here we see in one paragraph, they're telling us that you can recover if you're honest. This is kind of amazing that they're telling us over and over in the one paragraph, you can recover if you're honest. They're telling you that you have to be honest with yourself. And then really, the second time, I want to hone in on those words, rigorous honesty, because this is something that I've been carrying in my pocket, in my pocket of my mind and my memory for the last few months. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living, a way of living, a design for living. That's what these 12 steps are, which demands rigorous honesty. Let's take a look at the only other place in the big book that uses the words rigorous honesty. Come with me to that spot. It's on page one. Jumping a little ahead of myself here. Okay, I'm just going to do it from my site. Rigorous honesty. Here it is, 145, top paragraph. Come down the page about 7 lines. And it says here, in fact, he may say almost anything if he has accepted our solutions, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. There it is again, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. I want to take a look at the word rigorous. That's a really strong word, rigor. Rigorous honesty. The word rigorous, it means precise, accurate honesty, strict honesty, demanding honesty, exactness honesty, and my personal favorite that I carry in my pocket, severe honesty. Wow, that's what God wants from me, severe honesty. And that's not a small request, may I add. Not an easy thing for me, this severe honesty. Why? Because it's very humbling. Why? Let's take a look at page 21, bottom of the page. I want you to see why it's really hard to be honest, to be severely honest. And since you understand, you can't really take step one unless you're honest with yourself. As it tells us on page 58, you've got to be honest with you. We admitted we were powerless over food. Who were we admitting it to? We had to admit it to ourselves first. Okay, page 21, bottom of the page, about 10 lines up, it says, let me help you get there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, 10 lines. You'll see in the middle of the page, right in the middle of the paragraph, it says engagement kept. Right after that, he is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except, in our case, food. Do you see that? He is often perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything except food, but in that respect, He is incredibly dishonest and selfish. Isn't that interesting? And I think that that sentence holds a major key of why it's so hard for us to be honest. Because we're so perfectly sensible and well-balanced concerning everything else. Who wants to admit to everybody or to ourselves that we're a freak when it comes to food? The simple thing of feeding my body 3 times a day or maybe 5 times a day if I have to have a mid-afternoon or an evening snack because I happen to have hypoglycemia or because I have low blood sugar at different points of the day. Who wants to admit that I can accomplish great things in my life? I can play the guitar for 45 years and I can play it very well, that I can sing, that I can get degrees, that I can be pretty smart about a lot of things, but that I can't handle food, that I can't go to a meal and eat like a human being? Who wants to admit that? He is often perfectly sensible, well-balanced, concerning everything. I even play racquetball, except food. But in that respect, he is incredibly dishonest. Can you identify? I mean, I understand. Some of you are doctors. Some of you are lawyers. Some of you are professional artists, extremely talented. Some of you, you make a fortune. You don't even have a GED, and you make a fortune because you're brilliant people. And yet, you've got this mental blank spot. Okay, so we understand the problem. The problem is the food. That's where I was at when I first took step one. When I was just 22 years old and went to my first meeting, and I heard them in the room say, and this lovely friend said, "Sally, I want you to come with me to this meeting." Didn't explain what it was going to be about, had no idea where she was taking me. But she said something about my weight and something about losing weight, and I know you'd probably like to lose a few pounds. Would you be interested? Can I take you? Oh, I thought, sure, I'll do whatever they tell me to do. Sure, let me go. I walked in, and listen, they said, "Everybody stand up," and they asked us to read this cloth sign at the front of the page where they had the front of the room, this cloth sign that had the 12 steps, and all I read was the first step. We admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. And I did a complete blank. The rest of the night, this is what my brain looked like. I shut down because I heard those words. I heard everybody in the room say them, and I was lost in thought. Wow, these people understand me. These people, they get me. These people, they understand me. I'm in the right place. You see, I was honest enough, by the grace of God, I was honest enough to understand at that point that I, and so I could admit, I was honest enough and so I could admit that I was powerless over food and that my life had become unmanageable. I had spent my life up until that point, until 22 years old, until I walked into that room, hiding my eating behaviors, hiding wrappers, hiding plates, hiding forks and knives, sneaking, making excuses. Turn the page to page 23 here in the big book. It says, about 10 lines down, it says, "Sometimes these excuses have a certain plausibility, but none of them really make sense in the light of the havoc, in the light of a havoc an alcoholic's drinking bout creates." I remember people used to say all the time in front of me to my family, "I don't understand how she's a little chubby. She exercises so much. I never see her eat." Nobody ever saw me eat. I was a professional camouflage expert at a very young age. Nobody saw me eat. And I thought I was a camouflage expert with my body, too, with all the different blacks that I wore. I mean, I had like an incredible wardrobe of black. I was a camouflage expert. down the page a little bit more on page 23, it tells us again about, let's see, now it's in the second paragraph down, come down about three more lines. Some drinkers, some bingers, some eaters have excuses with which they are satisfied. I made excuses to myself all the time. Some drinkers, some eaters have excuses with which they are satisfied part of the time, but in their hearts, they really do not know why they do it. We couldn't even be honest with ourselves. I couldn't even understand what is this? So much of my life, I couldn't understand what is this. Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. And so I found this 12-step program, and I honed in, and I listened, and what did I get out of all that I heard for 30 years? What I heard was, Stella, you have an allergy of your body. That's all I heard. I heard page 92 at the bottom of the page. It talks about the body and the mind. I heard top of the page 143. I'm going to look at these. My favorite ones are these. I'm going to go to the other ones that you guys are used to seeing all the time. But these are my favorites. 143 at the top of the page. It says, whatever the method, its object is to thoroughly clear the mind and the body of the effects of the food. Clear the mind and the body of the effects of the food. That's what it tells us at the top of 143. On page 92, at the bottom of the page, another one of my favorites that really speaks to my heart. This is what I got for 30 years in OA. I understood that I had this allergy of my body, that I had to put the food down. Bottom of 92, it says, continue to speak of alcoholism, and in our case, continue to speak of the compulsive overeating disorder as an illness, a fatal malady, because it's deadly, it was killing me. Talk about the conditions of the body and the mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience and explain that many are doomed, strong words, who never realize their predicament. I didn't realize my predicament. Even when I was in OA, I was here to lose the weight. But truly, when they used to say that slogan, I came for the vanity, I stayed for the sanity. But trust me, I was mostly there for the vanity. I was reluctantly willing to stay for the sanity because I still didn't get just how nuts I was. I still hadn't taken an effective step one. After 30 years in this program, I still had not effectively been willing to be honest and to recognize I admit that I am powerless over the food. Yep, I got that part. That was the allergy part. I was willing to make strong fences around the food. I was willing to use the tools to draw strong fences around the food and to never pick up. But did I really understand that my life, the rest of my life, was unmanageable? You see, because being honest about the food was just the tip of the iceberg. Being honest about the rest of my life, being honest about so many other behaviors that were compulsive, that is where I am today after years of being in recovery. It was a progressive disease, a progressive recovery, and for me, a progressive willingness to be honest. Come with me to the bottom of page 13. I could keep going on with the body and the mind and the body and the mind and the body of the mind. Write these down. Look them up yourself. Page XXVI, XXV, V as in Victor, I. Page 7, the top of the page. Page 20 and page 21, top of the page, talks about the body and the mind. And page 22 at the bottom of the page, bottom of the mind, body and mind and body, body and mind, over and over, it says this, because we have an illness that's a twofold illness. And I'm deliberately speaking to the newcomers. I realize many of you know this, but there are newcomers with us, and that's who I'm speaking to this morning. So I want now to take you to the bottom of page 13 in the big book, where it tells us here the elements of recovery. I want to hone in on this honesty, this severe honesty, because we cannot become recovered without a severe honesty. Not just, you know, a little, I'm getting honest. Isn't it great? I'm getting more honest. We cannot really recover without severe honesty. Bottom of 13. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. So his friend promised that when he did these 12 steps, he would be growing his relationship with his higher power. And he goes on to say that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems. These are the key components to becoming recovered. The key elements, the essential elements. Belief in a power of God, because after all, we admit we're powerless over food and our lives have become unmanageable, so we have to have something outside of ourselves, some belief in a God or a higher power outside of ourselves, just a belief. We won't go there today because I want to really hone in on this step one, the honesty. What are you willing to admit? That's where I'm heading. What are you willing to admit? So these are the elements, belief in the power of God, plus it's like a recipe for a little tiny a power cake, you know, getting the power of God. It's a little recipe. Belief in the power of God plus a pinch, enough willingness, enough honesty, and enough humility. We have to have this. We must be willing. These are the foundations, really. Although these are principles that are, you know, humility is the seventh, is seven. It's the principle number seven. But the truth be told is that humility has to be hand in hand, like you put your hands together and hold them together. Humility goes with honesty because it's very humbling to be honest. And the more honest you are, it's because you're more and more willing to be humble. These elements, and it takes willingness, a willingness to be honest. You see, these three together, willingness, honesty, and humility, this is what makes it possible, coupled with a belief in a God or a power greater than yourself, a higher power. That is the elements, the essentials to getting well. And that's what we all want. We want to get emotionally well. Turn the page to the top of page 14. You see the words? The essential requirements. I mean, I've gone into stores where they're selling underwear, and they call it the essentials. These are the essentials of our getting well. Remember, we were doomed. Strong words. And these are the essentials to get well. Willingness, honesty, and humility. It takes great willingness to be honest, and it takes great humility to be honest. It also says the same thing on page 57, at the bottom of page 57. Come with me. I want you to see again and again, in key places in the book, the end of We Agnostics, it tells us, bottom of page 57, even so has God restored us. Remember, at the bottom of 13, they were giving us the elements to become restored. Here again, even so has God restored us all to our right minds. To this man, the revelation was sudden. Some of us grow into it more slowly. But he has come to all who have honestly sought him. There's the honesty. And if you look up a few sentences, paragraph before, what is this but a miracle of healing? Yes, it's elements. There's the word elements. Bottom of 13 uses the word elements. Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made him cry uncle. Circumstances made him put up a white flag and say, I'm done. I'm at the end of me. I can't fix this. Circumstances made him willing to believe. That's one of the elements at the bottom of 13. He humbly, there it is. You see willingness, you see belief, you see he humbly offered himself to his maker. And then you see a whole paragraph is dedicated to honesty. But he has come to all who have honestly sought him. There's the same four elements. One more time. Let's go to page 567. One more time. During the spiritual experience, the second part, the second page of that, 568 rather, 568. Come to the second paragraph. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly, you see, you can't take step one. You can't admit anything until you're willing to be honest. What are you willing to admit? How honest can you afford to be? Because that's what it takes to admit. What? I'm going to say it out loud. Am I going to admit I have an eating disorder? We admitted we were powerless over food? Wow, that's humbling. How free do you want to be? How honest are you willing to be? Most emphatically, we wish to say that any compulsive overeater capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover. Here's the word again, recover. These are the elements, these are the essentials to become recovered, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. Or may I add, defiant. Denial, defiance. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. Here it comes again. Willingness. Didn't we see that in the last two places on page 13 and on page 57, bottom of the page? Willingness, this is the essentials. Honesty, isn't that an essential, an element of recovery? And open-mindedness, why don't they use the word humility? Because the dictionary tells us that the meaning of humility is the absence of self-will, the absence of self-pride, and the absence of self-assertion. The absence of self-assertion is open-mindedness. I could be wrong. I'm willing to be open-minded, and that is one of the elements of humility. So you see, I believe here where it says honesty, capable of being honest, that's the beginning of that paragraph, most emphatically we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honesty, and then here we see willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness, which I equate with humility, are the essentials of recovery. Okay, now, I feel like I've now finally laid a foundation for what I would really like to say to you this morning. What are we willing to admit? How honest can I afford to be without looking like a freak? Yeah, that's really the truth. You see, because I want to be socially acceptable. I want to fit in with the people around me. And do I fit in with the people around me if I'm going to a holiday party and they're all eating willy-nilly? And here comes Sally with a scale because I don't eat willy-nilly. That doesn't make me look too normal. And that's my big problem. I want it to be normal. That really is the crux of the matter for me, is that I just wanted to fit in. I knew I didn't fit in, but I wanted to look like I fit in. I wanted to appear to fit in. And how could I look like I fit in when I've got this really big problem? I'm either eating like an animal in a party, or I'm slinking off into the bathroom with a plate of food because I know it's inappropriate what I put on that plate. So I'm sneaking off, or I'm going to just stand there, and I'm going to eat my weight in measured food, or what I sometimes do because it's just so much easier for me, is just eat my dinner and go to the party and have glass after glass with water with lemon and be happy and focus on the people. That also works for me. Step one, we admitted. How honest do I have to be? What do I have to admit? The elements of recovery make it clear that honesty is crucial. Let's go to page 30 in the book. page 30. The synthesis, here we see step one in a nutshell. Most of us have been unwilling. Why not? Why is it so hard to admit we were real compulsive overeaters? Why is it so hard to be willing to admit? Why is it so hard to be honest? You know, I've come to saying now I have an eating disorder. And my daughter recently said to me, why can't I have one normal parent? I said, what makes you think I'm so abnormal? She said, Mom, you're the first to say you have an eating disorder. All right, I admit I have an eating disorder. So, other parents, what? They're not. Are they so abnormal because they have renal dialysis 3 times a week? Because they have to take care of a different part of their body? They have a different illness? I have an eating disorder. What does that make me such a freak? But unfortunately, that's how some people choose to see us. Like, why can't you be normal? Just because I can't walk into an ice cream parlor with you and have an ice cream cone because I choose to walk over and have a bottle of water, that makes me a freak? Okay, maybe it does. Because we live in a world that people around us, they want us to be partakers of their eating and the excitement and the eating frenzy of their holidays. That's really the truth. That's what they want. Let's call it what it is, okay? We're different. We're going to look at that right here. We're different. And to be honest with you, I embrace it. I'm honest enough to say, yes, I have an eating disorder. I don't eat like that anymore. I don't have to say it even anymore. I don't have to walk in and say, I don't eat that. I don't have to have a billboard. I don't eat that. I am just comfortable with me. And when they say, oh, you can't have that? No, I don't say I can't have that. I say, no, I'd rather not have that. I choose not to have that. Let's take a look at page 30. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics, real compulsive overeaters. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our eating careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could eat like other people. For years, I tried to prove to myself that I could eat like the other people surrounding me at the parties, at family events, at holidays. Countless vain, the word vain, by the way, is fruitless, useless, futile, unsuccessful, conceited even, vain attempts to prove we could eat like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his eating is the great obsession of every abnormal eater. That's what it turns into, an obsession. Can I do it? Can I eat like that? The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. It is astonishing. Because even after being in OA for so many years, and anybody who's been in OA for even 1 year, maybe even 1 month, knows that after you've been in this group, and after you've read a little, and after you understand a little, you learn that you have this problem, that you have an allergy of your body that will force you to go back and eat until there's no more left. That's my portion, until it's all gone. How many blueberries? I never looked it up. Until they're all gone. That was my portion size. And you see, after you're in this program a while and you really understand you have an allergy of your body, whatever that allergy looks like for you, you then can never eat with impunity again. You always have this nagging thought. You know down deep you really can't eat that because you know down deep you have an allergy of your body. So you have this persistence of this illusion. It's astonishing, and many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede, not to you, not to my siblings or my children or to my neighbors or to anybody else. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were food addicts. We were compulsive overeaters. This is the first step in recovery. the delusion, and even the defiance that we are like other people or presently may be has to be smashed. We are not like other people. When are we going to get honest? I am not like other people. Am I going to be honest? You know, they just came out with new pumpkin coffee down here in South Jersey in the Wawa. Anybody who lives in South Jersey has at least smelled it or walked near it. And, you know, my daughter, she came to visit me a couple of times this month. She's been down here for a few days at a time to visit. And I haven't had coffee for over a year. And so what did I do? Oh, I think I'll have coffee. I have given up coffee because I had this stomach problem. And you see, I'm bringing this up with you because I want you to understand that for 30 years, I treated sugar and flour like a seesaw. I can't eat it. It makes me sick. I can't handle it. I can't stop. I can't control it. That's the bottom of page 30, the whole next paragraph. Control, control, control. We have lost the ability to control our eating, to ever recover control, that we were regaining control. We felt as if we were at times regaining control. It was all about control, control, control. Interestingly, it starts out with the sugar for most of us. Then hopefully we get honest. Some of us don't have to, but for me, I had to be honest. And I knew that it was also about the flour. It was all about white sugars. It was all about sugar in general. It was about white flour, and then it became flour in general. It became anything that was refined. I couldn't put in my body. And so for years, it was like a seesaw. Can I have it? I want to have it. Can I have it? No, I'm going to have it. And so there's this growing honesty. I can't have those things. I know after how many years of trying, I can finally be honest with me that I cannot have sugar and flour. Now I'm in a new seesaw, and the seesaw is the TV. Okay, I gave up the Comcast, the internet. I gave up the Netflix, and now I'm trying to control the TV, just like I tried to control the sugar and the flour by buying these little prepackaged 100-calorie cookies and these little tiny ice cream bars that I would buy, and I'll just have one a day for 6 days. Oh, that didn't last. I mean, I would eat the whole six of the Klondike bars in one night. I would eat all the cookies in one day. So I learned you can't control that, Sally. You're not going to, whatever you think you're controlling, it is controlling you, because from the living room, I could hear very clearly, Sally, there's more, Sally. And so I knew I could not control it, and I finally decided to let it go. And now I'm doing the same thing with the TV. I won't keep anything in my house. I'll just go to the library. I'll just rent one or two videos. I'll try to control that. But down deep, I know anything that I'm trying to control is controlling me. You see, for me, my eating disorder, the TV, the movies, there's a connection. I don't know why. I kind of do know why. I know it was because I was 8 years old. They put me in a room. Our house burned down, and they had to farm us out to all these different people. And they put me in a room with a bunch of candy and popcorn and sugary soda, probably not diet soda, and in front of the TV alone. And thus, the first thought, wow, this feels good. And it was like a starting gun. Boom! The beginning of my compulsive behavior, seeking the comfort of TV, seeking the comfort of food, seeking comfort, and not going to my own God for that same comfort. So I've talked about a lot of things, and I don't want to end this morning without bringing up a few things that I've learned in this last few years, and especially this last year. One of them is that I have to weigh and measure my food. I have to. Not everybody has to. I have to weigh and measure my food. I'm one of the unlucky ones that has the full eating disorder. My eating disorder includes sugar, flour, fat, the salty and the crunchy, and the volume eating. So if I'm volume eating, I'm not abstinent. just to be able to say, well, I didn't have sugar and I didn't have flour, that's not enough for me. If I'm eating compulsively, I'm not abstinent. So if I'm volume eating, I'm not abstinent. And so I've learned in this last year, within the same framework of if I'm trying to control it, then perhaps this is not something that I am really even trying to control. It's controlling me. Popcorn became an issue. I thought, well, if I don't have salty and buttery popcorn, I'll have naked popcorn if it's really clean. Why can't I have popcorn? I love the crunch, and I like the volume that I'm allowed to have of popcorn. Why can't I have that? Plus, we're all watching a movie, and I can look normal and eat some popcorn like everybody else, all in my own attempt to be normal and be with everybody else. I want that, but truth be told, I found that I was ever trying to get rid of the rest of the bag of popcorn. I was either throwing it away or I was giving it to a neighbor and saying, yeah, I'm not going to have this again for a while. Can you take it? Do you want it in your house? And the more I started to realize, Sally, that's your form of controlling the popcorn, that you're getting it out of the house. That's because you don't feel safe with it in the house. And that, to me, was eye-opening, and it let me know that has to stop. Popcorn is out. So this is how I have become progressively, not just progressively recovered, but even my abstinence has become progressive. And I've learned more and more of what I can and cannot have or cannot do. And this is from weighing and measuring has helped me because it gives me no wiggle room. It forces me to be more honest about what I'm doing with the food. Interestingly, I'll never forget this. It was this, I started the decision to weigh and measure in public a day before Thanksgiving last year, less than a year ago. It was just last Thanksgiving that I went to be with my whole family, and it was the first day that I had made the decision, the day before really, but here I was, Thanksgiving Day, made the decision that I'm going to weigh and measure everything at the table, everything that I eat, and I was not going to be, you know, in front of everybody. I was going to go in the kitchen and weigh my food out, put it on my plate, and then go and eat. But after I weighed and measured the cheese, and I had committed to having 1 ounce of cheese as my mid-afternoon snack, which I'm allowed. Do you hear that? Okay, I'm allowed, defensive. So I weighed and measured my 1 ounce of cheese, and I sat down at the table to eat it. And after I had that 1 ounce of cheese, and believe me, there was a table of all kinds of cheeses. So I had a tough time picking which cheese I was going to pick. And so as I sat there by myself in my thinking, golly, I really want more cheese. I really want more cheese. There's got to be a way for me to have more cheese. Is there any possibility that I didn't weigh and measure that properly? And the longer I sat there thinking about the cheese and how I could get more cheese because I really wanted to have just a little bit more. And as I sat there, I realized, Sally, do you see it? You have a problem with cheese. Maybe that's why you haven't been able to release that last 20 pounds. Wow, what an eye-opener. You see, what a gift. Weighing and measuring my food has given me a precious gift. Since I started weighing and measuring my food, I don't lose weight easily because I have a body badly burned, as page 133 tells us. When you have a body badly burned, you do a lot of fasting, which I did. It comes off very slowly, but since that time, I have lost about 10 pounds of my last 20 pounds. I'm very close now to goal weight, which I'm happy about. Of course, that's not what was important. What was important was that I could finally be honest. Be honest. Can we be honest? Let's be honest. I mean, there's things we hold on to we just don't want to let go of. And the way you figure out that something is really not, that you're not being rigorously honest, severely honest, I have to tell you, there's no wiggle room when you use a scale. There's no more, I'm not sure I had my whole ounce. Nope. And not only that, but I'm not left with the thoughts of, did I eat too much? Did I not eat enough? All of those marbles are gone because I weigh and measure everything I eat. I'm not telling you you have to weigh and measure everything you eat. I am suggesting that for the first 9 months of my recovery, I did. And then I stopped. Why? Because I was going in public in front of my family and my friends and in front of a business parties, and I wasn't willing to be honest. I didn't want people to know I have an eating disorder. I didn't want them to know. People who have cancer and walking around because they have alopecia and they've lost all their hair and they've got like a baseball cap covering it, or they've got, you know, some kind of a turban covering their baldness. You know, they're going, and maybe they're not willing to go because they're not willing to be honest enough about what they're dealing with. And for me, I didn't want to carry a scale. I didn't want to lay a scale out in front of people. What are they going to think of me? What did it really boil down to? What did I think of me? Was I willing to be honest? I have an eating disorder. You know, people don't really ask me. My daughter once, you know, in the very beginning, my youngest daughter's, when she saw me pull the scale out in the restaurant, she said, "Mom, you're making a scene." I said, "No, I'm not making a scene. I just pulled a little tiny scale out the size of two decks of cards. Nobody can even see it. My plate's on top of it. Please, Mom, you're making a scene. I'm going to weigh my food, and I'll put the scale away." Do you know, the last time I visited her, I didn't have my scale with me. And she said, "Mom, where's your scale?" I said, "Yeah, I have to go get it." "Oh." She was actually, like, shocked. "Where's your scale?" Like, she's now used to my scale. See, my scale is a level of my honesty. That I weigh and measure my food because I have an eating disorder, that's part of my honesty. I admitted I was powerless over food. How honest was I willing to be? I'm willing to bring a scale. How free do I want to be? I'm willing to pull out a scale. And it's humbling. It's humbling to pull out a scale. It's humbling to talk about what I'm going to eat with my sponsor every day. It's very humbling. You see, that humility goes hand in hand with that severe honesty. Making phone calls when I'm struggling because I want something, or when I don't want to bring my scale because I'm going to a party. Making a phone call and saying, "I'm struggling. I don't really want to do this." That's me being honest. That's me humbling myself and saying, "I need help." You see, when you take step one, what are you doing but saying, "I need help. I admit I need help. I admit that I'm powerless over this food, that my life has become unmanageable." What are you admitting? I need the herd. I need my friends. I need my sponsor. That I need the scale because my eyes are broken. I can't trust my broken button of my eyes. I want to just end by saying to you that the lies, what were the lies we told ourselves? You know, the lies that I told myself because I wasn't willing to be rigorously honest. And remember, in the book it tells us, half measures availed us nothing. What were the lies you told yourself? The lies were creators of the marbles that were floating around in my head. Let me give you an example of a couple of the marbles because of the lies I told myself. You see, the lies I told myself because, you know, I blame it again. I blame it on my genes and my environment. I was a New York Italian. What did you expect? I grew up in a home where I was surrounded by kids, and how to get out of everything I got in trouble for was to blame it on them, to lie by omission, was to exaggerate, the fast talk. I'm back. Wrapping it up. That's my sign from God. So I want to give you an example. I went to the library. I realized I had rented 15 movies. This happened about 9 months ago. I don't do that anymore. I rented about 15 movies and that they were overdue, which meant I was going to have a $15 fine, $1 for each of those overdue movies. How honest can I afford to be? Now, I have learned how to be such a schmoozer. I'm very good at making excuses. I'm very good at lying. By omission, by exaggerating, by my fast talking. I went in there with my 15 movies, and I went to the librarian, and I said, "Ah, incredible what happened. I got to tell you what happened." And I started with my usual schmoozing. And the librarian was very sweet. She actually was putting words in my mouth. She was helping me with my schmoozing. So you weren't able to call in? Well, yeah, kind of. Okay, yeah. That's exactly how it went, to be honest with you. And do you know that after she took the fine away and she goes, okay, she took the whole fine off. I went and I got some more movies the whole time I was feeling sick. Now I had a new marble. Guess what? I had a new marble for a 10-step turnaround, folks. I felt terrible. I even left the library with my movies, and the marble was floating around. I can't believe you did that. You were really dishonest. That was a lie, Sally. That was absolutely a flagrant lie. So the next morning, after I couldn't live with myself anymore, I went back to the library, and I walked in with a brand-new $10 bill and a $5 bill, which I had to go to the bank to get because I didn't really carry that cash around. And I walked in. The librarian that I was with that day wasn't in. A different librarian was there. So I had to kind of explain to her that, you know, yesterday I had a $15 fine. I was pretty quick and blunt because I was just so mad at me. I had a $15 fine, which I fast-talked my way out of, and I cannot live with myself. So here is my $15 fine. And she said, oh, boy, that's a new one. I've never, ever seen this happen before. I said, yeah, well, don't pat me on the back too much because the whole thing was born of me lying. And she said, well, I mean, I think it's still very nice that you came in and told the truth. I said, yeah, I did it for me. I did it for me because I have to live with me. Because I don't want to have that thought floating around for the next I don't know how long. I don't want to create a marble. And I could tell you many more marbles like that. So the moral of the story is, how free do you want to be? It's not just about your food. It's not just about being willing to bring a scale or being willing to weigh and measure or being willing to go in front of your family and just be who you are. It's not just about being honest with yourself and the people around you. It's about the marbles that you're creating that are leading to the 10-step turnarounds, that are leading you back to the food. Half measures avail us nothing. If it's calling to you, if you're still trying to control it, if you still find yourself thinking about wanting more, be honest and give up that food. Like I had to give up popcorn. Like I'm now in the process of telling my sponsor, I'm giving up Ezekiel bread, the raisin brand. I would like to give it all up, but I'm not willing to give it all up yet. But I'm definitely giving up the raisin one because I know it calls to me. It's too delicious. It's a party in my mouth. If it's a party in your mouth and if it's calling to you at all, you need to be honest. Let it go. It's so freeing to let it go. The truth is what's your truth? What are you willing to admit to you? What is your truth? The TV is dangerous? That the TV might be dangerous for you too? That I lose my connection with my God? That I can't eat in front of the TV? It's a back alley. What's the truth for you about coffee? Is coffee hard on your stomach? I was up to 40 milligrams of Prilosec in the morning and 40 milligrams of Prilosec at night until I finally found out that my doctor said, Sally, we thought it was Barrett's syndrome in your stomach when they did an endoscopy. We had to do a biopsy. It came back negative, but Sally, your stomach, it looks like it's just shy of Barrett's syndrome. You got to do something different. So I gave up the coffee, and I went on their Prilosec for years. And after years, they did another endoscopy, and my stomach came back pink as a baby. What do you think Sally did? She wants coffee. Oh, maybe just pumpkin coffee, just for a few days. What does that say to Sally? Sally, what is your truth? Can your body handle pumpkin coffee or any other coffee? Let's be honest. Same thing with raisins. Same thing with Ezekiel raisin bread. Let's be honest. It's the truth. What are you willing to admit? We admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. What are you willing to admit? How honest are you willing to be? How free are you willing to be? Because there's a wonderful gift that comes with the honesty. And I'm going to end by taking you back to where I began. Page 218, I cannot see the cause of this temptation now, but I am to learn later that it began with my desire. It all began with my selfish desires. For material success becoming greater than my interest in the welfare of my fellow man. There it is in a nutshell. It's selfish. My selfish desires. I learn more of that foundation stone of character, which is honesty. I learn that when we act upon the highest conception of honesty that is given us, the highest conception of honesty that is given us, and it comes from your God conscious. I learn that when we act upon the highest conception of honesty that is given us, our sense of honesty becomes more acute. I learn that honesty is truth, and that truth shall make us free. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Relieve me of this dishonesty that I live with. Give me, Father, a willingness to be more and more honest. Father, my honesty is so broken, just like my concepts about what is healthy eating is broken. Teach me to be honest. Uncover my lack of honesty. Give me the willingness to take off the camouflage, to take off the masks that I wear, and to be honest. Father, help me to move beyond just being honest about the food. Help me, Father, to be willing to be honest about who I am and not to be afraid anymore to be me. Honestly, me. Teach me your ways. Show me who I am in you. I thank you, Father, for all that's been said today. Amen.
Sally, thanks so much for your contribution this morning. We appreciate it. Let me say that before we go into question and answer period here, that Sally's contact information will be provided after the recording. Before we do that, though, I just want to make a correction. I had mentioned a share ID earlier, which was incorrect. I must have dreamt it, or who knows. But the share ID for Friday, October 16th, is 8124. That's 8124 for Friday. So let's now open it up for questions for Sally. In order to do that, to jump in here, press star one. Who would like who has a question for Sally?
Hi, my name is Priscilla. I'd like to ask a question.
Okay, Priscilla. Who else? Press star one to unmute. All right. Well, let's get it started with Priscilla. Priscilla, go right ahead.
Hi, Sally. Thank you so much for your share. I have been dealing with a sponsor myself, and it hasn't been going very well. I've been honest with her, and I'm looking for a sponsor. So I was just wondering what your suggestions are on that.
Priscilla, I'm a little unclear. Did I hear you say you've been sponsoring yourself?
I've been working with a sponsor for like a week, and we just had end. So I've been now looking for a new sponsor.
Priscilla, and are you at the beginning or are you step one?
Yes.
So I would really recommend that you go on a vision for you, and every single morning at the end of the second hour at about almost exactly 8:50, there is an opportunity for you to, number one, listen, and listen to those who come forward and say that they're available. And many of them will say that they're available to take you through the doctor's opinion. And
okay.
Some of those will additionally be available for more. But the doctor's opinion gives them an opportunity to see if it's a good fit, because you're going to work together very closely for probably 3 to 6 months. And so it's a nice opportunity to take those people and even to take a number of them, you know, to go ahead and write their numbers down and to meet with 3 or 4 people who are willing to take you through the doctor's opinion and see if there's a good fit with one of them that you feel that you can really listen and learn from that particular person. Some of them will say that they're available to sponsor right up front. You can give them a call as well. And I recommend that you go ahead and take, you know, some people call it a temporary sponsor. And, you know, I don't want to suggest you take a temporary sponsor because you're so new, you have so much to learn. But I think that you're just going to be a sponge. I'm hoping that you're going to be a sponge and learn from everyone. But I do recommend that you take the opportunities with any and all who are available to take you through the doctor's opinion, because you do need to build your network. It's not just about a sponsor. It takes a village to become recovered. And so think of yourself as a fish. You've got into a boat and you're flipping around the boat. You're flipping, flopping in the boat. And there's nets on the side of the boat that are going to hold you in from flopping over the side back into the food, into the water. And you don't want to flop back into the food in the process of what you're doing right now. You want to get anchored. You want to get anchored. And the way you get anchored is you build a net. You build a net. Start weaving a net that works, like a fishing net. You build a net that works. And how do you build a net that works? You're going to start meeting people. And how do you do that? At the end of a and really even through the entire Vision for You phone calls, you're listening to people that you identify with. And this is what takes some courage to reach out and make some phone calls. But this is honestly what you must do to get well. You must reach out and make and take phone calls. Sometimes you'll make 5 phone calls in a row and you'll just get answering machine. Consider yourself throwing seeds. They'll call you back. And when you least expect it, a phone call will come and you will be building a net that works, because you need a network. I hope that answers your question, Priscilla.
Thanks so much, Priscilla. Who else would like to, who has a question for Sally?
Hi, it's Amy E. I have a question.
Okay, Amy, anybody else?
I don't have a question. I just want to tell her it was a wonderful story.
Oh, thanks so much. Who is that? Okay, Amy E., you're up.
Thank you. Thank you, Sally, so much for a really inspiring qualification. I always get so much out of your shares and your in-depth knowledge of the big book. Very impressive. And what you were reading from page 218, I'm looking at my 3rd edition. I'm wondering what the name of that story is so I can find it in this edition.
Oh, sure. Thank you for bringing that question up. I'm sure there's lots of people that are wondering about that. That's the story of, I believe that's the Southern Gentleman. Yes, that's the story of Fitz, the Southern Gentleman. It's the very last page, the last 2 paragraphs of the Southern Gentleman. Thank you for that question, Amy. It's a great question.
Thank you.
Okay, who else would like to jump in?
Hello?
Yeah, who's this?
Hello, this is Matt M. from New Jersey.
Hey, Matt. Anybody else that wants to jump in after Matt? Okay, Matt, go ahead.
Hi, Sally. Thank you for your qualification. I was just wondering, as far as getting honest with the food, I thought you were supposed to, like, if your food can't be, like, cardboard, I thought you're supposed to enjoy your food, but not, like, in, what do you mean, like, partying in your mouth? Like, I thought food is not meant to, I know it's meant to be used as fuel, but, like, should I not have any enjoyment in my food, or should I also just be really, really aware of how much I enjoy my food and be really aware of what stuff goes in my mouth, the level of enjoyment I have in it?
You know, that's such a great question, Matt. Thank you for asking. It's so subjective, you know, what's a party in your mouth is not going to be a party in my mouth. And I like my food to taste good. Without a doubt, I I still use cinnamon. I don't use it all the time, everything. I eat plain yogurt. Sometimes I'll throw some cinnamon in it. Most of the time I just like plain yogurt, plain Greek yogurt. I keep my food very simple, and I'm very mindful that my food is, I would call it mindful eating, to be honest with you, my eating, because I want my food to feed my body how can I say this? Because I have a very slow metabolism, because I did so much fasting through most of my life, I leaned on fasting to lose weight, so consequently I have a very slow metabolism. So what I eat it's very important that what I eat is going to give my body the vitamins, the nutrition, and the stickability to make it to the next meal. And so consequently, I am very mindful that I'm not eating things that, you know, maybe they do taste, for instance, Ezekiel bread would be, and not that I want to get into food here because we're talking about the big book, but I want to use it as an example because it's a sloppy choice for me. When there's better choices for me, like eating oatmeal in the morning or even making whole grain rice and making that be my grain in the morning. And then it's going to have to last me from breakfast at around 8 o'clock in the morning. It's got to get me till 12:30 or 1 o'clock. And so I know that certain things are going to stick with me more effectively than other things. And so when I eat, I'm very mindful eating, that I'm eating things that are going to have that stickability that that's going to keep me satisfied. And second of all, I am very cautious about something. For instance, an example of what is a dangerous thing for me is sugar-free jams. There's no aspartame in it. It's just made from real jam. It's made from, you know, it's a jelly that's and there's nothing in it that is necessarily illegal. And I can have 2 tablespoons of it, and apparently it's legal. But is it really the best choice for me? It is a party in my mouth. It's not the best choice because how can you compare 2 tablespoons of this this sugar-free, even aspartame-free jam when I could be having a 6-ounce apple that's going to be much more filling, that's going to digest much slower than that jam is, and that jam is going to give me a boost. Woo! Woohoo! That's the party in my mouth that jam will give me. So then I have the decision to make, I'm not buying that, because that, number one, gives me a party in my mouth. Number two, let's be honest, and that's what I have to say to myself, let's be honest, Sally, is that the best choice for you? What are you doing? And the best choice for me is that I'm going to have instead either the 4-ounce banana or the 4-ounce frozen mango or the 6 ounces of apple or pear. And so, Matt, this is really where rigorous honesty takes place, and this is where progressive recovery takes place. It's where nobody else knows what's going on inside of you. Nobody else knows. When I tell them, oh, yeah, I can handle popcorn. No, you're not going to make me not have popcorn, because there's that defiant streak that says, no, just because everybody else can't have popcorn, I'm not going to not have popcorn. I can have popcorn. And so, I held on to popcorn for a long time until I had to be honest. What are you doing, Sally? You're getting rid of the extra popcorn. Why are you getting rid of it? Why can't you keep that extra popcorn in the house? Why not? All right, clearly I'm controlling it. Therefore, it's controlling me. I want more. When it's all said and done, I want it, and I want it my next meal. Here's a big heads up. When I want popcorn for lunch, and then I want it again for dinner, and then I want it the next day, is there any way I can have that for breakfast? Probably can't get away with that. That's a heads up. This is where nobody else is in your head but you. You're the one who has to be rigorously, severely honest. How free do you want to be? That's really where the pedal hits the metal, where you're listening to your thinking and you're being honest, because your sponsor is not going to make you do anything. You're still an American citizen here. You're the one who has to be honest about what's going on in your head, what's going on in your mouth. Do you find yourself walking away thinking, oh, I wish I could have more. I can't wait to have that again at my next meal. You're the one. That's the way it works. And this is where rigorous honesty has served me well. With the food, with my thinking, with what's going on in my head, and it takes place even with the marbles, even with the when I'm getting to my fourth step work, that rigorous honesty. You know, when you don't want to put something down, that's why it calls it fact-facing, fact-finding. That takes some more honesty, severe honesty. When you get to step six and you're looking at your character defects, more severe honesty. Wow, I'm manipulative. I'm a control freak. Wow, I'm still so selfish. Some more rigorous honesty. Rigorous honesty with the television, with the movies, God, I live alone. I'm going to be alone. What do you want me to do with this time? Well, maybe you should make a list of what you're going to do with that time, because you've got some very precious time. Instead of throwing it in front of the TV, what else can you do with that precious time? Maybe you could be practicing your guitar. Maybe you could be writing a song. Maybe you could be doing a whole host of other things. Maybe you could be taking a walk in nature. You see, that's where I have to be severely honest. I hope that answers your question, Matt.
Thanks for the question, Matt. Who else would like to ask Sally a question? Press star one.
I do.
Who's that?
This is Mary Lee in California. Mary Lee R.
Okay, Mary Lee R. Anybody else?
Hello?
Yes, who's that?
Hi, this is Deanne F. in New York.
Deanne F. in New York. Okay, and one other person.
Carol Lee.
I'm sorry, I heard. Okay, hold on. I heard someone from New Jersey. Who is that?
Diane.
Okay, so we have Deanne, as long as two different people, Deanne F. and then Diane, and there was one other person as well.
Carol G.
How are you?
Carol G.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, okay, Carol. Hold on. So we have Mary Lee R., we have Deanne F., we have Diane, and we have our good friend Carol G. Okay, Mary Lee, you're up.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, Sally. I've always felt that nicotine and caffeine and all the aims create cravings, and I just wanted to have you elaborate a little bit about the caffeine.
Oh, this is painful. I knew I was going to hate this topic. I will elaborate on the caffeine. For myself, I don't feel like I'm addicted to caffeine, to be honest with you. And yet, I know how far I went with caffeine. I remember years ago when I would go, when I was into food, and I would go and I would get, in the middle of the summer, I would get these huge 32-ounce Slurpees. And I'd fill them with ice, and I would fill them with coffee, and I'd gunk, milk, and I would throw a bunch of sweet and lows in there and stir it up, and I would nurse this thing for hours. I would have this, I don't know how many cups of coffee were in there. And so I know that the caffeine is a potential for me. I gave up the caffeine about a year and a half ago because of my health and because of my stomach. And when I gave it up, I went someplace to literally be locked up for 3 weeks to give up the caffeine. I went to a health resort where I gave up the caffeine and dairy and sweet and low. It's another thing I decided that all artificial sweeteners were going to go out, so I gave it all up. And so I left there free and clear. And I have to say, I had a headache for about a week. I was putting ice packs on my head and putting my feet into warm water to pull the blood away from my head to get the headache to go away, which is a wonderful way, by the way, to get rid of that horrible first few days of giving up caffeine. Put your feet into a bucket of warm water and put a blanket around your shoulders and put an ice pack on your head. It really alleviates a lot of the pain. It's called hydrotherapy. So I gave up the coffee, and then about maybe a month ago, I was visiting with my kids, and they were going and getting all kinds of coffee, and I thought, oh, man, I can't even have a cup of coffee with them. I don't have a cup of coffee. I miss my coffee. And that's where it began. It began with the social aspect, the social piece of it, of I wanted to be able to you know, like have a drink with your fellow friends. You know, you're going to the ice cream parlor. They were going to Dunkin' Donuts or someplace else. And I wanted to be part of the social media scene that went on there. That's really what it was. And so I had the coffee. And I had, you know, I didn't have it the next day. And I thought, this was my thinking. I'm only going to have it on Sunday. Can you see it? There's the control. I'm going to make it my Sunday treat. Just on Sunday, once a week. Okay, so that built. After 2 or 3 weeks, then I had a daughter who came down here on business, and she was here for 3 days, and every morning she wanted me to drive her to the Wawa because she loves your pumpkin coffee. Well, I'm here anyway. I may as well have my pumpkin coffee. And I get to the Wawa, and there's pumpkin coffee. And so 3 days in a row I have the pumpkin coffee. And I get to have milk with my morning breakfast, so I wasn't, like, breaking any rules or anything. I get to have 8 ounces of milk with my morning meal, so I just plan to have my 8 ounces of milk in my coffee, and I had my pumpkin coffee. And so it grew to 3 days that week and the following, and then I had it by myself thinking, I'm just going to have it while they're having pumpkin coffee season. I'll just have it while pumpkin coffee season is going on. By the way, pumpkin coffee season, I'm pretty sure it doesn't end until sometime in January. So I've given myself a nice big fat window to have my pumpkin coffee. But down deep inside, I keep thinking to myself the truth. You see, honesty, because I have this God consciousness that God is continually bringing to my mind. Sally, you did not give up the coffee because you were so sure you were so addicted. You gave up the coffee because it wasn't good for your body, and it led you to have a sick stomach, and you had GERD, acid reflux. And the acid reflux was directly related to the coffee. That's why you gave up the coffee. So why are you taking coffee back? That's true. So my daughter went home. I did not have coffee yesterday when she went home. And the thought crossed my mind this morning, like a marble rolling across my mind. Gee, maybe I should go down to the Wawa this morning and get a cup of coffee. I could be drinking coffee during the meeting. Like, that sounds cool, and that sounds good. And then the thought crossed my mind, maybe you shouldn't have that cup of coffee. Maybe you're going to be thinking more about the honesty of why you gave up the coffee. And even the honesty of giving up the cheese, folks, because cheese, for my whole life, I've been leaning on the medication. You got to look at these things. I've been lactose intolerant my whole life. I've been taking Celdane D for 8 years, and then I switched to Allegra, then I switched to Claritin for years. Every single day, I took a Claritin so that I could have my dairy. And then I was having Zyrtec. Every single day, I was having the Zyrtec. And what do you know? So while I was away at that place, you know, a year and a half ago for that retreat, when I gave up the coffee and the dairy, I also gave up the omeprazole or Prilosec, and I also gave up the Zyrtec, and I was sick as a dog for 3 weeks while I was there. I was in bed sick as a dog doing all kinds of hydrotherapy for my nose being full of all kinds of mucus and getting all this mucus out of my head and at the same time getting rid of the headache from the coffee. And I walked away and I thought, I'm never going to do that again to my body. I'm so obviously addicted to coffee and dairy. And here I am, a year and a half later, I want coffee. I want milk in my coffee. Hello. How free do I want to be? That's why I was not happy about this topic, because I knew I was going to be on this line saying, I should not be drinking coffee. It is not good for my body. I should not be eating dairy. I am lactose intolerant. I'm using medication to put a Band-Aid on what my body doesn't like. And I should not be watching TV or any movies because it is going down a back alley and sets me up for struggling. I lose my God consciousness. I lose this in precious, beautiful contact that I have with my God if I sink into the movies. And then the food thoughts start, and I find myself white-knuckling until the end of the movie. Is that healthy? Is that wise? Is that really healthy for me? The truth is, and that's what we're talking about this morning, how free do we want to be? How honest can I afford to be? The truth is, what's your truth? You have to look at that question.
What are the lies you're telling yourself? That's the question.
Okay, let's move on then to Deanne F., and then we'll have Diane, and then Carol G. Deanne?
I'm sorry. I'll try to be more succinct.
Hi, this is Deanne F. from New York. And I really just want to say that I thank you so much, first of all, Sally, because you've been an inspiration to me ever since I got on this line, which was almost a year ago. And that...
Thank you.
You know, you're welcome. And that, you know, there are no coincidences. There's, you know, God incidences. And I am literally trying to catch a ferry this morning, but I wanted to make sure that I say that I came in late to the meeting because I went actually to an open AA meeting. And that while I was sitting there, I realized that I told a lie last night. And it's like an old lie. And that I didn't even realize I told it. That's how old it is. And that's like, you know, it's that old shoe kind of thing. And that, you know, while I was sitting in the room and it was about humility, and honesty, that I realized that I had to tell someone in that room. You know, my sponsor says, you know, if you don't do your 10th step and you don't do it right away, it's like having poo on your shoe that you can't, you know, everywhere you go, you stink up the room. And that's exactly, how I did feel. And I pulled somebody aside and I told them, and I told them the lie, and they asked me why, and I said, because I'm not good enough. God knows I'm good enough. I definitely, when I'm rigorously honest, I find out that I'm good enough and what I'm here to do. And if I lie, then I'm not doing what I'm here to do. I'm not here doing God's will. So hearing your story at the exact moment that I came in, that is the ultimate God incident, that you were talking about exactly what is going on in my life right now, which is if I say I'm going to be rigorously honest, then I must be rigorously honest. And I need courage today to be able to tell this person what I did, because there's so much shame in it, and he may not like me anymore. But I give all of that fear to God, and hearing you talk about it just strengthens me, and I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, God, and thank you for your rigorous honesty in sharing. And I pass.
Thank you. It's amazing how much fear really does drive our dishonesty, doesn't it? That's why when it says we were driven by 100 forms of fear, when it tells us we were driven by 100 forms of fear, that is what truly did lead us in much of the dishonesty. Go ahead, Larry.
Thanks. Deanne, thank you for your comment. Diane, you're up.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me?
I can.
This is Diane Shay from New Jersey. My question to Sally this morning, and thank you so much for being here, Sally, is that I'm sponsoring someone, and she finished her ninth step. However, she had a tragic something happened to her family, and she lost her abs. So my question is, should I continue with 10, 11, and 12, or should I be doing something else?
Diane, it's a really good question. I want to just be sure I heard you correctly because it's really hard to hear you. You're way in the back. So just to be clear, you're sponsoring someone. She's in her step 9, and something tragic happened, and she broke her abstinence. And should she continue into her 10, 11, and 12, or what should she do? Is that the correct question? Diane? Well, I think we might have lost Diane.
You know, Sally, I think you're right on the mark there. That's kind of piecing it together. That's what I heard. So why don't you go ahead and answer that?
Okay, I'll go ahead and answer that then. So this person is in ninth step, and they break their abstinence. And what I really wanted to know is, did she royally break her abstinence, or did she just, like, have too much salad or too many green beans? Because I really do think
that while it's indicative something's very wrong, I don't think it's the same thing as she had a full-blown binge. I always like to ask that question because when somebody is slipping and they're, you know, they have that extra string bean or they have that extra salad, yes, it's indicative, but I think they should keep going because whatever it is they're doing, if it clearly is upsetting them and it's causing them to slip. And so they need more, they need to press into the herd more. But when somebody goes flying back into the food, when they really go back to binging in the food, that is a different story. Because what it says to me is that that person still really hasn't understood step one, two, and three. And so they can just keep going, but they're not, they just haven't, they haven't made the connection yet. They haven't made the, they haven't switched over to the relationship with God. Let me just give you a couple of places here where I can back up what I'm saying. I'm not trying to speak from my head. I want to speak from what the book says. So in the middle of page 28 and also on page 29, it tells us the same thing. Smack in the middle of page 28, it tells us, all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator, with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest. See it? As soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. So what I believe is that when I'm struggling with the food, the minute I'm struggling with the food, which does happen, something will happen that will trigger me and I'll be struggling with the food. I'm very neutral with the sugars and the flours, and I wouldn't go near it with a 10-foot pole. I'm very neutral. When I say I'm struggling with the food, it's that I want extra apple. Hello, Sally, what is wrong? Why are you wanting extra apple? You had your apple. Why are you suddenly hungry? And I have to always ask myself, why am I hungry? Am I hungry because I'm physically hungry? Not likely. It's mostly that I'm spiritually hungry. That's pretty much 9.999 out of 10 times I'm spiritually hungry, and I'm not willing to turn, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand him. So on page 29, the second paragraph says, each individual in the personal story describes in his own language, from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. So when somebody is in whatever step they're in, if they're in step, even if they're in step 10, 11, and 12, if they do a nosedive back into the food, what it tells me is that they went back to an old lover. They went back to that old lover food that they had a sick relationship with. They went back to the food for the comfort. That's what they wanted, comfort, instead of turning to their higher power for the true comfort, because that's the truth. My higher power, my God, is the true comfort. When I turn to God and I bring to God whatever is agitating me, even knowing I was going to share this morning, I had moments, pinpoint moments, where I thought, can't believe you're going to do that. Ugh. And then right away, I would have this sense of, but then who am I relying on, me or God? Oh, yeah, okay. I'm going to surrender it to you, God. It's going to be what you want it to be. Just whatever you want it to be, I surrender. So when you developed this manner of living, this way of living, this design for living, when you're living using these principles, these steps as your way of living, you will not go back to whatever the obsessive compulsive behavior was. You won't turn back. You will quickly pick up again the set of spiritual tools like I did. And you will turn your attention not to what can I eat, What do I have in the refrigerator that tastes good? Where can I go in my car to get something? No, you will not turn your thoughts that direction. Because remember, all action is born in thought. You will instead turn your thought to a new way of living, a new manner of living. And your thoughts will be prayer, pause, page 87, bottom of the page, pause. Maybe I'll ponder and say, hey, I don't just need to pause here and ask God what's my next right move. Maybe I don't need to just pray. Maybe I need to get on the phone and tell someone. I'm having some really disrupting thoughts. I'm really breathless, irritable, and discontent. And you see, I'm going to take those actions, the actions that lead me towards healthy relationship with my higher power. So what I say to you is, let's be clear. If this woman... this person, your protege, picked up an extra apple or an extra strawberry or an extra string bean, okay, obviously it's symptomatic that something is very wrong. Why are you turning to the food? Why aren't you turning to your God and to the herd? Remember, when I say that, to the herd, I'm always referring to the medical view on page 569, the second paragraph after Foster. He says, this organization of Alcoholics Anonymous calls on two great reservoirs of power. Two reservoirs of power. I can turn to God, and if for some reason I'm having a hard time turning to God, I'm blocked for whatever reason, then I can turn to the herd instinct. I can turn to the association with one's fellows. So that's how I think. If for some reason I turn to God and I feel uncomfortable still, then I turn to the herd. I turn to my fellows, which is why you need a net. Thanks for letting me share all that. And go ahead, Larry.
Okay. Thank you, Diane. That's a great question. So we are going to wrap up with Carol G's question. Carol, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Larry.
Oh, good morning, Carol.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Vision View. And thank you, Sally, the gorgeous Sally. Thank you. And thank you, Sally, for your enthusiasm and for making honesty such a loving action today. I'm just trying to remember my question. Oh, yes, it was, can you be more specific or give another summary of how you help sponsees have a more effective step one, focusing on the effective part, please?
Okay, I can have them help them to have a more effective step one. I can do that, to be honest with you. There's a few things I can do. I focus in on a couple of things. First of all, I focus in the fact we want to talk about with them the symptoms of the eating disorder. You want to focus on, of course, page 21 at the bottom of the page tells us the symptom of being dishonest. Page 21 also gives us other symptoms that are going on. Page 21, I love that page because it gives us all the symptoms. It talks about how we would get more or less insanely drunk, that we were not even looking to just eat because we were just feeding our body for more strength. We were doing it because we wanted to feel this incredible sense of full stuff, almost like it gave us a security blanket of now I'm stuffed. And then on page 21, it talks about the dangerous antisocial behaviors, the isolation, the drawing the curtains and staying alone and wanting to be alone. And that was another symptom of our disease. And then it goes on to talk about the selfishness and the dishonesty that comes with it. Then I take them to page 30 and 31 in the big book where it talks about I'm not normal, I'm not like other people. I talk about the fact that we can't stop, that the book talks about how we, the bottom of page 22, it says we are equally positive that once he takes any of these compulsive foods, whatever, into his system, something happens both in the bodily and the mental sense. And what does it give us? It gives us the effect. XXVII talks about the effect, that we were looking for the effect of being numb or drunk, both in the bodily and mentally sense, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. It's like we're driven until it's all gone or until something, you know, some kind of a trapdoor drops, you know, it allows us to stop. I talk about their character defects. I ask them about their own being out of control, their dangerous antisocial behaviors, and then their own levels of dishonesty. And the sneaky behavior, I ask them to describe for me some of the sneakiness and some of the isolation. So I remind them of the disease itself. And then I take them to the elements that are required at the bottom of 13 and the bottom of 57 and the bottom of 568. Talk about the fact that it does take being honest. And can you be honest with yourself about some of these behaviors that you've been doing? And I remind them that half measures avail us nothing. So once and for all, you have to really be severely honest about what it is that you're going to have to lay down. I mean, I didn't want to lay down certain things. I didn't want to lay down fat. I was really okay with giving up peanut butter in the beginning. For many, many years, I gave up peanut butter. But then I also had as a backdrop, I had almond butter. oh, I can do almond butter. Almond butter doesn't do that to me. You know, I don't know what I was thinking. I had a problem with fats all along, and I had to be very mindful of what I'm doing with my fats, and that took some honesty. To be honest with you, too, I think that when you finished going through the big book, and you take them through the big book, and you take them right to that page 30, which really is, to me, step one in a nutshell. When you take them to that page 30, where it says we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were compulsive overeaters, you really have to drive home the point that nobody else has to get it. I remember saying this to you so many times. It doesn't matter if your kid or your friends or your family or whoever, it doesn't matter who else gets it. You are the one who has to fully concede. You know, put up the stick with the white, you know, with the white flag to concede to your innermost self that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. And see, it says here the delusion that we are like other people, or presently maybe, has to be smashed. And it goes on to talk about, you know, the ever desiring to control our eating behaviors when we could not control it. And over and over on page 101, in the middle of the page, it talks about control. Page 31, in the middle, talks about if anyone who is showing inability to control his eating can do a right about face and drink like a gentleman. Just, you want to drive in some of these really key points that we are not like other men. That's what it tells us on 30 and 31, over and over. And we cannot control the food, and if they're like us, they can't. That we cannot stop. Once we get started, it's hard to stay. Stop, and then talk about these features, you know, these character defects that make us so much like each other. That is what I do to drive home step one. I take them to specific paragraphs at the end of reading all the way through. Then I take them through specific paragraphs that really drive home step one. That's what I do with my own protégés, Carol. Thanks for the question. A good question.
Sally, thank you so much. Also, Carol G., thank you for your question. Excellent question. Sally, once again, you know, we really want to thank you for your generous spirit, your generous contribution this morning. Appreciate that. So
thank
now,
you,
Larry.
Thank
oh,
you for
my,
your Sunday morning to be with us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. What else do I have to do? Are you kidding? My pleasure. My pleasure. So everyone, thank you for being here. The share ID for this particular program is 8128. So for Sally's contribution this morning, that share ID is 8128. Now I'm going to read from page 164 and close the meeting the way we typically do, and then Sally's contact information will be available. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.